So welcome everybody to Webinar Wednesday from Sight and Sound Technology for the 21st of October. I can't believe we're in the third week of October already. My name is Stuart Lawler, and as always, my colleague Carl Braley is here with me. We're delighted to be back again. It feels longer than 2 weeks in some respects since we were with you last for our World Sight Day special. But so many things are happening, aren't they, in terms of the old COVID-19 world, and things change so fast. So wherever you are, I hope you're staying safe and well. Now, today's session is all about Linux accessibility. And it's something that I'm certainly very interested in because I know nothing about it and I want to learn how I might be able to use it. So we're very glad to have Andrew Elias with us, and we'll be introducing Andrew in just a second, and he's going to tell us all about Linux and, of course, answer all your questions. And speaking of questions, you can get in touch with us today. If you'd like to engage with us on the Zoom meeting platform, you can raise your hand with Alt and Y on Windows, Command and Y using a Mac, or you can activate the raise hand button on your phone. If you want to chat to us and type in the chat, you can do that by pressing Alt and H on Windows, Command and H on the Mac, or activating the chat option on your mobile app of choice. And if you're sending a chat, please make sure to send it to all panelists and attendees so that everybody in the room gets to hear what you want to say. Carl will be keeping an eye on the chat and the Q&A, and we'll go back and forward to see what our participants have to say during the session. Now, Andrew Elias has been working on Linux and computer programming for many years and is a lecturer and is very interested, I know from having a couple of really interesting conversations with him over the last week or so, around people who are visually impaired choosing programming as a potential career. And I'm sure we will talk about that as well. But for the moment, Andrew, you're very welcome. Thank you for giving us your time today. I'm thoroughly looking forward to your presentation. And we hand over to you. The floor is now yours.
Well, hello, everybody. Do feel free to ask questions. If you're lost and I'm a bit too technical in places, that's what happens when you've got an enthusiast presenter. And I'm sure someone will kind of rein me in a gentle way and will sort of drop from a high altitude down to a lower altitude. So, as Stuart has said, I run a involved with two organizations. One is a technical training company that is sort of typically it's graduate level and beyond, and that's IT training, but also embedded in real-time systems. And then I also do tutoring in the science subjects and as well as maths and computer science. So there's a discussion whether computer science is a science or not, but I think it's a science. And then also, so we're a specialized tutorial college, GCSEs and A levels, mostly A levels, and then also starting to develop teaching, tutoring, training, whatever you want to call it, for people who are thinking of a career change. And that's something I want to talk about later. So I'm passionate about developing computer programming, teaching, training programs for blind programmers and users, and also system administrators. And it's partly personal. I've had a twin sister, sadly, she's no longer with us. And she lost her sight to rheumatoid arthritis and had to have both her eyes removed in her late teens. But she got a university degree and then a Kennedy Scholarship to Harvard to do international law. And then she specialized in human rights law. She had a few professorships. And she was one of these mad people who thrived on danger, and she did a lot of work for Solidarity, and she got an Officer's Medal for bravery for doing that. And she was also made an honorary life fellow of the Guide Dogs in the UK. So I claim, and you can shoot me down if you want to, that whatever Windows can do, Linux can do better. Now, as a controversial claim, but there's some truth in it. And Linux can do a lot for blind users and blind programmers. And so my job is to evangelize a bit about Linux, tell you what sort of non-techie fun things you can do with Linux, and also maybe encourage you if you want to experiment without spending vast amounts of money and trying to run Linux on a Windows machine. You can get your hold of a little Raspberry Pi and you can attach screen, braillers, speakers and so on to it, and there's even a Raspberry Pi Linux distribution, so you just simply get a little SD memory card, plug it into your Raspberry Pi, fire it up, and it should, it does, more or less work out of the box. And Raspberry Pi is used also in the Bristol Braille e-reader. So that is also something that's probably worth knowing, and I'm sure they wouldn't have chosen it for any other reason apart from that. It's cheap and it's powerful, and there's a lively and vibrant community. And there's also, I'm a Quaker, but this is not too militaristic. Every year there's something called a Pi Walls competition, where you build little robots and you get them to do things such as chasing each other with pins and popping balloons, or crawling over obstacle courses and things. And so Croydon Tutorial College's entry has been accepted. And so you can even, there's no reason to say that blind programmers shouldn't develop robots and systems like that. So Linux is open source. That means it's free. And it started off as a little undergraduate project. Someone said, oh, I want to build an operating system. And he said, well, why don't I try and build a Unix-like operating system? So he started coding and he put a message on the web, and as they say, the rest is history. And Linux is very widely used. If you look at a lot of the web servers out there in the internet, they're running Apache 2 on Linux. If you know of the cloud, so a lot of people are deploying their systems in the cloud, then by far the greatest number of machines deployed in the cloud are Linux-based machines. And it doesn't matter whether you're using Amazon cloud technology or Microsoft Azure technology, Linux is still king of the castle, as it were. Now, on Windows 10 comes with a Windows subsystem for Linux, so it can sort of do most Linux-y things, so you can pretend you've got a full Linux system. Not quite, and it should be possible to run some of the Linux accessibility tools on Windows subsystem for Linux, but as with all these things, you have to try it, and then you might have to modify configurations or install device drivers and so on. The other way of running Linux on Windows is to install a virtualization technology. So VirtualBox is quite popular. And once you've installed VirtualBox, you can fire up the Linux system of your choice. And that should also work from the point of view of Linux-capable accessibility technologies. But I haven't tried that because I've tried things on pure Linux. And as I've already mentioned, Raspberry Pi is an interesting way to go. And I'm thinking of schools. If you want to introduce Linux cheaply, a Raspberry Pi costs about £30-40, and you can do wonderful things with it. So concepts-wise, a number of things we have to get sorted out first. So graphical user interfaces are wasted on totally blind users, but for partially sighted users, you've got screen magnifiers and all sorts of things like that. And yes, you do have graphical user interfaces and desktops on Linux, and there are screen magnifiers that work with Linux systems. So that's not an issue if you're partially sighted and you want to use a screen magnifier. What does a graphical user interface desktop do? Well, it's got lots of icons and some menu bars, and if you can navigate around the system using shortcut keys, if you've got something like JAWS under Windows or something like that, or Orca under Linux, and then you can fire up applications and interact with the graphical user interfaces these applications provide. However, my feelings are that actually, if you're totally blind, graphics is just a handicap, it's a hindrance. And you really ought to be looking at the use of terminals and shell scripting and things like that. So on Windows, there's something called PowerShell. On Linux, you have Shell. And there you can drive almost everything. You can even fire up graphical interface-based applications and so on. But if you're interested in programming, you don't need a graphical user interface to write code and test code. So Linux gives you a number of choices when it comes to graphical desktops. That's one of the, well, both the curse and a blessing when it comes to open systems. There is choice. So if you're digging around, then the main Graphical user interfaces are GNOME, G-N-O-M-E, and I should probably pronounce it wrong, MATE or MATE, M-A-T-E. And they're various lightweight desktop environments, which means you don't need heavyweight graphics libraries and high performance graphics cards to run them. So as I said earlier, the general screen with the equivalent to JAWS or NVDA on Linux is Orca. And it works with most of the graphics desktops. And think of Orca as something like JAWS or NVDA. So JAWS doesn't work on Linux, and it's expensive-ish. And NVDA doesn't work on Linux, although in theory, they could, if they felt so inspired, because it's written in Python, do a kind of NVDA migration to Linux. That might be interesting. So Orca, you say, well, does it work with web browsers? Well, it works pretty well with Firefox, and it works, last time I checked, pretty well with the most recent version of the Chrome browser. If you want to do word processing and spreadsheets, Orca works with the open source equivalent of Microsoft Office, which is called LibreOffice, as in free office. And you can also install LibreOffice under Windows, and NVDA and JAWS work with LibreOffice running on Microsoft Windows. And on my Windows system, I have both LibreOffice and Microsoft Windows, and well, it's partly the mood. They're both very rich and a bit too rich for my taste. I sometimes work with a simple text editor. So on Windows, it will be Notepad++, and on Linux, it's Gedit. And Orca, surprise, surprise, works with Gedit, which is nice. Now, if you're looking for Orca on the web, be careful, because there's another Orca which does hairy, scary quantum chemistry calculation. Now, as a someone with a PhD in physical chemistry and a master's in chemical physics, spectroscopy, this is music to my heart, but I think most people will be, what's this Orca when it's doing, talking about things like molecular orbitals and so on. But it's fun, and who knows, maybe there's some chemists amongst you, or at least theoretical chemists. So what about multimedia? Well, you can watch Netflix on Linux. You can play DVDs on Linux. There's lots of media players. And you say, but isn't there encryption? Well, you have to be careful that you're not breaking too many laws, because the media player breaks the content scrambling system encryption. So, well, a bit naughty, so a little slap on the hand, but you can do it. There's lots of audiophile quality music players, and you can be the most demanding audiophile, there will be something for you. And also, if you want to do composing, Orca can be work with something called MuseScore. So you can, it's sort of music scores and their accessibility mechanisms for it. And there's also something called Audacity, and Orca will work with Audacity. So you can play around composing electronic music on Linux systems. If you're interested in electronic music, then maybe you should beat a path to Queen Mary University in London. They have a lovely project called Bella, which works with another little board like the Raspberry Pi, but this is called the BeagleBone Black, because it's got a number of hard real-time-ish capabilities. And they've built essentially a music synthesizer add-on, because the music department, stroke with computer science, is interested in developing new instruments. So basically you take Bella and you interface it with, well, whatever takes your fancy. People have tried cardboard boxes, scratchy surfaces, various electronic devices, and you get to program the music and the capabilities of your music instrument. So if you're interested in electronic music, then Linux has an awful lot to offer you. I haven't explored whether you can use the Bella technology with screen readers. I think you can, but why not get in touch with the people at Queen Mary University and ask them? And I'm sure they'd be very interested. So what about Braille? Well, in the Linux world, you have something called BRLTTY, and in Linux, you have things called daemons, which are things that provide services. So in Windows, they're called services. And it provides access to the Linux console, and you're using text mode, and you're using a refreshable Braille display. So BRLTTY can drive the Braille display, and so yes, you can even use Braillers in the Linux world. And BRLTTY, the latest versions, also has some speech capability into them. Fine. So I better tell you what is a console. It's just a text window like the old DOS windows. And there are many people I come across who say, in the days of DOS, and you know, I could do, being I'm the blind person, I could do lots of wonderful things. Well, consoles are alive and well, and Linux, of course, is very keen on consoles, and Orca is compatible with a number of these terminal consoles, such as the GNOME terminal and so on. So that's, I hope, has sort of covered the general things that you can do. So I hope I've sort of made the case that anything you can do in Windows, Linux can do better. And partly anyway. And so don't be afraid of experimenting with Linux. Most Linux enthusiasts are friendly and helpful. And that's the beauty of open source. It relies on active communities and who are, well, ideologically motivated, which is not a bad thing. So then I want to go on to, you know, a little mission of mine is to get more and more blind people into careers in computing and programming. And so one of the things I'm interested, so at Croydon Tutorial College, we cope with students who have various needs. So we have dyslexic and dyspraxic students. I haven't taught any blind students yet who want to do computer science. I have had blind and partially sighted people on first technology transfer courses. And I'm also interested in more mature students who want to change of career. And so there's a lot you can do Linux-wise and computing-wise. So I've already talked about JAWS and NVDA and how you can navigate around desktops. Now to say, what sort of kind of computer jobs and IT jobs are there for blind people? Well, one of the attractions of computer and IT jobs is they're amenable to flexible working time. So for instance, if you're working for a support team, hey, you can work various shifts. You can work remotely. You don't have to come into the office necessarily. The pay is pretty good. The work can be challenging and it can be very interesting, and the people are nice. What more can I say? Certainly when I've taught system administration courses and other courses to large organizations, you know, it's been a very pleasant experience. So what sort of jobs can blind people do in IT? Well, programming is one. There are a few very gifted programmers, but not many, and they have discovered their own little brew of fixes and technologies to make them productive. And the ones I've read about, they have prodigious memories, which is an advantage. So programming is one career. Another career is data analysis and data processing. You do not need a graphics interface to query a relational database. You do not need a graphics interface to analyze data. Yes, you can use spreadsheets, but you don't need to. And if you look at the current track and trace fiasco where, you know, £7,000 a day consultants and they imported data into a spreadsheet without realizing it could only read a certain amount of data. So they lost a lot of data and then more dodgy spreadsheets to fix a dodgy spreadsheet problem. Say, well, if you'd been there and you'd be in a database expert, you say, well, don't waste your time with Excel, just feed into a relational database, such as MariaDB or PostgreSQL, or you can even use SQL Server and Oracle, it doesn't matter. Then you can also, in the cloud, you have to deploy these virtual machines and virtual services in the cloud. And so there's a lot of system support and administration work there. The other thing you might consider is network administration support. So you've possibly heard of Cisco. And they did at one stage run courses for blind network administrators. Interestingly, Cisco is also getting more and more interested in the cloud, and programming in Python, which is a very powerful language for system administration, is now becoming a key feature of Oracle's DevNet operating framework. So plenty of jobs, interesting jobs, if you have that kind of mind. And the technology to help you do such jobs is there. So one of the things I've been mentioned already is you don't need a graphical user interface. So if you look at how can I drive a system, how can I drive applications, I can write things called shell scripts. So on Microsoft Windows, you have PowerShell, which sadly not enough people use or appreciate. On Linux and the Macintosh, you've got you can run Bash programs, Bash scripts, because Mac OS X is a form of Unix-based system. You can also, if you want to experiment, you can install on Windows something called Cygwin, and that gives you a Linux-like terminal window, and you have all the Linux tools and utilities, and you can write your Bash scripts, so you can even practice your Linux skills in a Windows environment. And then you've also got Microsoft Windows subsystem for Linux, and you can run, as I mentioned earlier, Linux on VirtualBox on a Windows platform. So, the JAWS screen reader can work with PowerShell, and so can the NVDA screen reader. They're not perfectly fluent, but you can do a lot. And PowerShell is very powerful for Windows systems because you can administer systems, your own remote systems. You can automate lots of admin tasks, and you can run a Python interpreter within a PowerShell terminal, and you try out your Python programming skills and learn Python programming skills at the command line. And then more importantly, you can use PowerShell to configure Microsoft Azure cloud services. And if you become a guru, then I think you can command very high salaries. What do I mean by high salaries? Well, six-figure sums if you're good. So what about Linux? Well, you've got various graphical desktops environments. So GNOME is one, KDE is another. They all work nicely with Orca. But you have something which you can install on Windows, but the speech part doesn't, at the moment it doesn't seem to work too well. Something called Emacs. Emacs is written in a strange dialect of Lisp, but it's ridiculously powerful and ridiculously clever. And more importantly, it comes with effectively an Emacs screen reader called Emacs Speak, and it's driven entirely by shortcut keys. There's zillions of them. And if you're someone who is versatile, I'm not, I struggle with memorizing all these shortcut keys. I choose my own little subset, but you can do amazing things Emacs Speak. You can edit documents, you can typeset documents, you can run commands to control shell commands, so bash commands from Emacs. You can have multiple edit windows open up at the same time, and you can just switch between them without having to navigate graphically. And yes, it has spell checkers, and it can do translate into various languages. And if it's not there, well, and you become a genius Lisp programmer and add something to Emacs. It's already far too clever, I think, for its own good. And if you are keen on artificial intelligence, then it's a wonderful environment for programming in an AI language called Lisp, which is not everybody's cup of tea, but it might be a few Lisp enthusiasts in the audience, who knows. And so if I was to think, how would I teach blind computer users to program the Linux way? Well, I'd say, well, forget about graphical user interfaces. Let's do everything using command line tools and utilities to get started. Let's get you started with shell script programming. And if you wanted to, you could say, oh, we can do PowerShell as well. And then basic text editing skills. So there's a text editor called Nano, which you can run from the command line. And everything works with the Orca screen reader. You've got BRLTTY. You've also got screen magnification. So there's even a magnifier for the text-oriented shell environment. So there's no excuse really for not having a go. And then there are other goodies. So there is a command line screen reader, which is written in Python. That actually also works on the Mac. It's called TDSR. I would also, of course, teach students how to use Emacs with Emacs Speak because it is so powerful and it opens up so many doors, and you don't have to worry about sort of tabbing through graphical user interfaces and so on. You do everything, fire up your terminal or configure Linux so it fires up automatically and you're in, and off you go. So as I said earlier, you can edit documents, run computer programs, build computer programs, and so on. So Emacs, if you haven't come across it, is wonderful. And Emacs with Emacs Speak, well, just perfect. I've got it working, and the voices are actually quite nice. And if you want to, I'm sure you can dig around and find all sorts of other voices. So then you say, okay, so shell programming is a must. Python is a very important language because it can be used for system administration as well as for programming. And it's also used in artificial intelligence, which is another area that there's plenty of work in. And I would probably, Python is difficult for blind users because you have to indent everything and you can't skip a few indents. But a lot of other languages that are powerful are free format languages. So actually, I would go with C and C++. Very powerful, and you can do a lot with them. And if you don't like C++, you can, and you like Microsoft, you can always code in C#. And if you want to do A levels, well, then it would have to be C# because they don't support C and C++. They can be too tricky. So what about sending emails, reading emails? Hey, it's easy. You can do it all from the command line. You don't have to have a complicated graphical user interface. What about contact management systems or customer relationships management systems? Well, you can think of JavaScript. So JavaScript, you say, it runs in a web browser. Not necessarily. These days, there's something called node.js. And there is a wonderful command line driven customer relationships management system written in JavaScript, which you can, once you've mastered how to code it, you can modify it and add all sorts of features, and you can track your contacts, sort of have appointments and so on at the end of a little script running in a terminal. So that is a very, very quick survey. So I try not to take up too much of your time and patience. So I open the floor up to all of you if you want to ask questions and explore things. And if I can't answer it straight away, I can always do a bit of research. So thank you very much for listening.
Andrew, thank you very much. It's an absolutely great overview to Linux. And I'm sure there'll be lots of questions. We'll go over to those in just a sec. But just before we do that, we did get a couple of emails that came in. We got four or five messages. A number of them were from David Griffiths. So David, thank you for getting in touch. And I'm going to try and summarize everything, Andrew, because I think they're probably questions that I'm sure you can chat a little bit about. So there's been a few queries we've got in about using the Windows 10 subsystem Linux, just how accessible it is, and does the Orca screen reader work on that? Then there's a question from David, can Linux work on a Mac? He's mentioned he tried Linux, which I think is visually impaired Linux previously. He also asks, is there such a thing as a menu system within Linux? So for somebody who's new, who mightn't be comfortable with the command line, can Linux be used in, is there a kind of a menu way to navigate it? And also finally, can Linux be used on a Chromebook? So there's a couple of questions there.
Right. Okay, so I haven't tried all of these things, but Windows subsystem for Linux, yes, I have used it. I ran a cloud computing Azure course for a big one of these consultancy multinational firms who's moving its entire computing technology into the Microsoft Azure cloud, and Windows subsystem for Linux. Yes, it worked after a fashion. Orca should work, but that assumes that it can play nicely with the underlying Microsoft Windows device drives and so on. And I haven't tried that. VirtualBox, you can run any Linux distribution. And from VirtualBox, you can access pretty nearly all the hardware on your PC. And Orca should run on that. You can also install VirtualBox on a Mac, no problems there. And again, give or take some configuration, gremlin sorting issues, I see no reason why you shouldn't be able to run something like Orca on Linux running inside VirtualBox on a Macintosh. If we look at menuing system, then all the graphical desktops in the Linux world, they come in various flavors, but gradually, because people find it prettier than the Windows alternative, they've got a kind of Macintosh OS X-like graphical environment. And yes, it has menu bars and all sorts of things like that at the top, so you can find applications and fire up applications, and you can park them on your desktop if you wish to and navigate that way. So yes, you can do all that from within Orca, as far as I know. So that covers the menuing side of things. The Chromebook I have not explored. That we're now entering Google territory. So we have to be careful. I think you should be able to. But if we're talking about Google, then we've got to also mention Android, which is a Google technology. Android runs on top of Linux, and homework possibly for me, because I haven't explored it, but there should be accessibility applications that run on Android running on top of Linux. And so it should be possible, I would guess, that you should be able to do something Linux-ish. It depends on how Google supports you. So in theory, there is something called AOSP, which is an open source platform for Android. However, and Google is saying, aren't we wonderful, we've open sourced it, but all the clever stuff that drives mobile phones is locked off. Surprise, surprise. Well, Google is a big multinational. It's got very greedy and demanding investors. So, hey, there are certain things you can't get at. But it is, it should be possible to have nice accessibility applications running on top of Android. And the reason I say that is that because Android is also being very widely used in the new automotive system. So imagine, entertainment system in cars, engine monitoring systems, navigation systems, they all will tend to have an Android type interface. And so it should be possible to build Android-y like things that with accessibility features. And so I see no reason why I shouldn't do something like that with Chrome. Hope I've covered everything, not perfectly, but enough to get started there.
Perfect, Andrew. Thank you very much. Just one really quick email just come in from Gary while you were doing that. I think it's a quick answer. He says, has the stuttering problem been fixed between Orca and the native Raspberry Pi sound system?
It depends on the device drivers you're using and whether you're using a Pi 2 or Pi 3 or Pi 4. The Raspberry Pi uses a Broadcom chip, and parts of the Broadcom technology are closed off. So you're relying on what Broadcom gives you. The answer is, I don't know. I suspect it will be fixed if it hasn't been fixed already. And as with all these things, there's usually people at the cutting edge working with the next generation of Linux and associated drivers and so on the Raspberry Pi. So I think it should be fixed. So one of my bits of homework, I'm running my Orca on a nice, big, powerful PC workstation. But one of my projects is to set up a little Raspberry Pi and try it out on that, because, of course, in many schools with limited budgets, it's a perfect solution.
Okay, wonderful. Thank you very much, Andrew. Right, we're going to go over to Carl and see how our raised hands and chat box are going, and see if anybody would like to get in. I'm sure there's more questions queuing up and people would like to get in touch and ask questions.
Oh, there is indeed. Fortunately, there's no hands at the minute because the chat box is absolutely rammed. First one, I'm just going to start going down the list. Does the software have any clashes with other software, as software producers don't seem to talk to each other?
Can you give me an example of which software?
This is it. Gary, if you can get back with a little bit more information on any specific types of software, that would be great. Hang on. Dun, 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 dun. This has been great. Thanks so much. Here we go. This has been great. Thank you so much. I've only used Linux on a server through SSH. That's just saying they're going to give it a go on another computer. And James Benstead has also said, as per Trevor's question above, this was the one regarding the crossover. And if there's any issues running with something else, there have been about different Linux distributions and which one might work best for blind and visually impaired people. Do any distributions work out of the box as a VI friendly setup with a screen reader running by default?
Right. I haven't done exhaustive research, so let's answer this first. Linux SSH. Well, basically, if you're administering a web server and you've got a service provider, typically you will go in through an SSH terminal window. On Microsoft Windows, you do SSH using something called PuTTY. And as far as I know, NVDA and JAWS does play nicely with PuTTY. So you can set up a little SSH terminal window and off you go. Linux distributions, well, there is one for the Raspberry Pi. And I'm sure if I look, people will have built distributions for other platforms. And you can build your own. The important thing about Linux is that Linux consists of applications that run in user space and the kernel, which does a lot of the low level stuff. And when you build a distribution, you build, depending on how far you wish to go, you build the kernel and you build a set of applications and you load it up and it boots up and off it goes. So what you can do is you can build a Linux distribution which has all the device drivers for all your assistive technologies. So you can drive your speech, your cameras, your displays, your speakers and so on, and microphones. And then you have the applications. And what you do is you can configure Linux so that when it starts up in the way you want it to. So if you say, I want it to start up with Orca running and a terminal window occupying center stage, your wish is my command. You just have to get the configuration right. And people have done this. And so you can also look around. If you find some nice distributions, then I will be very interested. My homework is to look at the Raspberry Pi distribution, but I might also look at other Linux boards as well. And if you're looking at Linux systems, then also you now have very small Intel-driven boxes. So instead of having a huge computer, you can have essentially a silent computer which runs without a fan. And you plug in your keyboard, brailers, speakers, whatever to it. And it's a little box that you can carry around with you. And then people can supply you with keyboards and screens and other peripherals and off you go. And it should be possible to run a blind user-friendly Linux distribution that way. And they're cheaper and than big PC. If you're into computer games, that's another story. But if you are just want a small Linux system, then there are a number of very, very nice small little format Linux boxes based on new generation Intel processors, and Linux runs beautifully on those. But I haven't yet researched running a blind user-friendly distribution, but I ought to, because again, for schools, it's cost. You know, you don't need high resolution terminals and super duper high powered graphics cards. So I will do that. I've answered enough there.
Yeah, that's brilliant. Thank you. Every time I look down, there's more and more messages popping in. What have we got here? Andrew Hodgson, as someone who works in the IT industry and is blind, I find myself spending all day using Windows Subsystem for Linux when it came out, because I use JAWS and features it provides as a screen reader, along with the power of Linux on a terminal for my work tasks. Let me get my breath back. I think this is hugely, hugely powerful combination for the blind computer users. Added to this, using a Docker has also made my life... Oh, so it's more of a statement than actually a question. I do apologize about that one.
I think the Windows subsystem for Linux is something that's very worthwhile exploring. So again, thinking of ordinary users, but also for teaching in schools, then certainly a good way, I'm thinking of the IT department in schools, because they're not always, the IT administrators not always particularly well paid, because industry pays more. so schools often suffer. But it might be, rather than installing Linux systems separately, Windows subsystem for Linux on Windows 10 may be a good way to go. And because JAWS works with it and NVDA, that simplifies things, because you can introduce your students to a Windows-based system, JAWS and NVDA, and then you can introduce Linux that way. I think it's an excellent idea. And Docker, I better explain, not many people possibly know about Docker, but it is the technology of the future. Basically, instead of running a complete Linux distribution on a virtual machine, you can virtualize applications. So you can build a little package, all the software you need, and put it in a container. And then you can deploy your container in the cloud or on a PC and so on. And that's what Docker gives you. And as opposed to virtualization, which is resource hungry, Docker uses far fewer resources, and it is therefore can scale better. You can run multiple Docker instances, and it should be possible, although again, homework for me to do research wise, it should be possible to build a Docker application tailored for blind users and then deploy it on machines here, there, and everywhere. So thank you for that question. That's quite useful.
Andrew, may I ask something just really quickly? And I know there is a raised hand. We go to that in a sec. Just from an installation perspective, I suppose, for a totally blind person, you have a machine that you want to install Linux on, and you have a blank system. Is there talking installers when you boot the?
Yes, yeah? People have enabled talking technology into installers. And basically, the installation is typically menu-driven, but you can use a text menu as opposed to a graphical menu. And when you are doing installation, you have something, you have a bootloader, and as long as you've got a bootloader with speech, text-to-speech capabilities, it can talk you through the bootloading process, but it just simply loads up your Linux distribution. And if you've done it correctly, it can drive the whole installation process using simple text menus and voice. I haven't looked into that because normally you'd buy a pre-canned distribution. You just stick your... you can sort of stick your USB stick or your DVD or even off the internet, off a network, and it should just install everything for you rather than you having to do a lot of low-level stuff. So it should be possible. I've yet to do these experiments.
Okay, brilliant. Thank you very much.
Brilliant. We have a certain Trevor Lyons. he said Orca voice is painful on the ear. Have you come across any other alternatives?
Well, Emacs speak I like, and but Emacs speak is just confined to Emacs, whereas Orca is the equivalent of JAWS NVDA. And people, I from what I've seen, sort of brief research stints, better voices are being developed for Orca.
Okay,
that's, I mean, there's and underneath it all, it depends on the text-to-speech software you're running. And and Orca allows you to, as far as I know, allows you to install different text-to-speech backends. So if you want a sexy voice, hey, someone's provided the sexy voice technology, then lucky you. check that the higher authority doesn't get suspicious.
Okay, that's brilliant. We've got another question from Hussein. It's brilliant presentation. Thanks a lot. Lots of distributions out there. Any suggested ones to try? Also, can the screen reader be started from the word go, i.e. without sighted assistance? What about using Linux on a live CD to recover Windows systems?
Right, okay. So Windows systems recovery is tricky. Old systems, yes, from a live CD, you can do it. You can certainly rescue data on a Windows system that's gone ballistic on you. You can't do password recovery on Windows. particularly easily. That's all been security wise, that's all been blocked off. But if you look at distributions, then there are a number of distributions out there. So let me just go through the most widely used one. There are also uber techie geeky distributions, which are for the fanatical. So the standard most open source pure distribution is Debian. And so Raspberry Pi and so distributions often based on Debian. A Debian derivative that uses non-open source software as well, so some people think that's heretical, but we have to be pragmatic, is Ubuntu, and that's a company called Canonical. So Ubuntu is very widely used. Currently, Ubuntu 16 is the older-ish version. You've got 18 and 20. So those are used. You've also got Red Hat, which comes in a commercial enterprise version, but the free version that a lot of web servers use is something called CentOS, C-E-N-T-O-S, and Cent operating system. And that's fine. That's also very good. And then you've got SUSE Linux, which is, that used to be Novell, and then who owns SUSE now? Maybe, I forget who owns SUSE now. It's all these big venture capitalists sort of buying up and amalgamating and swallowing up companies. But SUSE Linux is very widely used, especially in the cloud, and with business data analysis systems and control systems and so on, such as SAP. And so there's SUSE, Ubuntu, Debian, Red Hat, CentOS, and then there are all sorts of strange distributions out there. There's nothing to stop you building your own, but I do warn you, I did try it once in a class. After 3 hours, we gave up. It is a painful process. You're better off starting with an existing distribution, say a Debian distribution, and then tweaking it if you want to tailor one to your own desires. And you can get speech. You can system can will start up if you configure it correctly, or with Orca running straight away. Have I missed anything?
Hang on 2 seconds. Let's get with the next one. Ba-da-bum-ba-dum. Just worked something from David Apps. You can start Orca with a keyboard shortcut. So that's fine. That's sorted that one out. I have a Linux as a dual boot on a laptop, uses Orca for speech, but cannot work out how to attach a Braille display.
Right. Braille displays it's in the murky world of device drivers set up. So basically, you have to have the correct device drivers installed. Now, briefly, I'll try not to be too technical, but one of the nice things about Linux, it's you can install into the kernel bits of code dynamically. So you've got kernel loadable modules. And so you can load device drivers for new devices if you've got everything set up and configured correctly, manually or automatically. So typically, I suspect the problem is he's got a USB device. And then what happens when you plug in a USB device? The kernel says, well, it's such and such a device. Do I have a driver for it? And if it doesn't, it goes, bleh. But in that case, it's up to you to install a suitable driver for your USB device. If you've got a non-USB device, then you have to install a driver. And if you say, can I build a kernel with these drivers already pre-installed? The answer is yes, you can. It's up to you. So Linux gives you a lot of freedom. And usually, if some devices don't work, either you've got some kernel modules missing, or you've got you haven't installed device drivers. I suppose the other thing to add is there's a lot of research in the Linux community for getting device drivers to work from user space. That means instead of doing dangerous root user kernel manipulation things, because remember, if you load an application into the kernel, it can trash the entire kernel and then you are really stuck. So if you do it in user space, it just crashes the driver in user space and they say, well, reboot and try again. And that is slowly people are developing more and more user space device drivers, and that includes USB device drivers.
Brilliant. Just going to do this quick one from, I've lost it. I've literally lost it. Hang on. It's just Paul Clayton. Vinex was pre-configured for VI users, but seems to be discontinued. Are you aware?
There are various distributions. So there was, and some of them, they appear and disappear. It's like a bit like twinkling stars. So yes, so yeah, unless you have, it's an open community, if people don't support it, it kind of withers on the vine, as it were. So there's people constantly developing, but remember, usually these are archived. And so what you can do is you say, if I want one, well, get a group of people who are interested and then brew up your own distribution using the one that's no longer so widely supported as a starting point.
Okay, that's brilliant. Thank you. Right, we're just going to go. Oh, I'm trying to do this. Ahmed, if you can just unmute yourself.
Can you hear me, guys?
We've got you, yeah.
You can, Ahmed. How are you?
I'm doing good. All the best for asking. And first of all, thank you for the presentation. And it's great information. And really, it reminds me of the days that I was in university, Westminster 2003, when I was doing computer science. Logging from what's called through SSH to a Unix server. So it's great. And but my question is regarding the subsystem of Linux on Windows, how is it? And the other thing is actually I need to ask, have you, because there was a course that I wanted to do during the lockdown, and it is pen testing using Kali Linux, and I found the Orca was so slow. I don't know whether that was depend on the flavor of Linux that I was using, and I don't know, but I found it really slow, and Orca was not responsive. It, certain places it was giving me a feedback, and the other occasions it wasn't giving me anything.
Well, that's like all Linux things. You have to dig around, look at where the problems might arise. But you're running on a Kali Linux distribution, I assume.
Yes.
And my thoughts are that, you know, the beauty of Linux is you can separate what the platform you're working on from the platform you're running the code on. So if Kali Linux is running applications that are using up vast amounts of computer resources, then of course Orca, which also uses resources, is going to be slowed down. So why don't you simply run an SSH link into your Kali Linux platform, and then Orca is running on your local machine, and you can configure it so it's not doing too many other things. And the Kali Linux machine is doing whatever it needs to do, and it's just sending information backwards and forwards. But the other thing with Kali Linux penetration testing can generate vast volumes of data. And the problem with screen readers and lots of lines of text is it's not fast. And therefore, my advice is that's where the brilliance of writing your own shell scripts or Python scripts comes in. So I tell people, so you've got, and I've had people on course and I say, so how big are your log files? And they say, oh, half a gigabyte. And say, how do you read this log text file? We open a text editor and then it crashes. Oh dear. Or we read it a line at a time. Well, you know, a gigabyte of log file is millions of lines. It's going to take you forever to find the line you're interested in. So basically you write a Python script that searches through these log files for the things you're after. Because a lot of the stuff there is, it just lots and lots of detail, and somewhere in it, they're the vital clues. And so my advice is automate. That's what Linux is good for. And so so Kali Linux is one of the standard penetration testing systems. It's very powerful. And so all I'm saying is, run the Kali Linux machine separately from the machine running Orca and have a look.
And then do the SSH.
Yes. SSH is a serial link. It's perfect.
Yeah, okay. What about the subsystem of the Linux?
It's Linux. How is it? Nothing to everything. So when I was teaching this course to this company that moved its entire one, and its latest, you know, this is a multi-million dollar multinational company. This was for the support staff. We looked at the Windows subsystem for Linux. It's limited. it's nice. It's Microsoft saying, well, yes, we're kind of supporting Linux. We ended up actually running Linux on powerful machines in using VirtualBox to access the Azure cloud in this case. So there are limitations with Windows subsystem for Linux.
And so, but can you not install any the applications on Linux applications on it?
Yes, you can. You can install Linux applications on Windows subsystem for Linux, WSL. Yes, in the normal way.
So the same like ABT kit?
Sorry?
Is that apt-get? Get?
Yes. Those sorts of things work, yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Or apt-get if it's an Ubuntu Debian distribution, or Yum, which is the equivalent on a CentOS distribution. Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ahmed. We've got Fitzroy. If you can unmute yourself, Fitzroy.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we've got you.
Hi, Fitzroy. That's a great name, by the way.
Oh, thank you.
Great name.
Is it Turkish?
I believe it's German.
Okay. I think there was a Lord Fitzroy, wasn't there, at some point?
There was, yes.
There you go. We've got Lord Fitzroy here. Great to have you.
Very kind. My question is a bit of a deviation from the, I saw from the outline of the event that you teach at Croydon College.
Croydon Tutorial College.
And you mentioned that you were interested in accessibility, so widening participation, and as someone who's a mature student, maybe something I can ask afterwards, but how would I go about enrolling?
Well, AJ, who works with me and sort of both for FTT and so on, who's administrative and sort of user friendly, non techie things, you can send an email I can to both of us, and we can get back in touch with you. But I'm very serious about. When I teach A-level students, you can be any age to do A-level. So I remember once teaching a lovely lady, GCSE maths. She was from an Irish family. She had a twin sister who did teacher training, became a school teacher. She ended up looking after their elderly mother. And she came sort of, a few evenings a week just to do GCSE maths. And she was brilliant. And so I thought, that's nice. So the idea here is that a lot of people now might be attracted to a career in IT or system support or programming, and it's something that I would love to do. And ideally, although I don't have much faith in the current establishment, if you get a research grant to develop suitable training materials and resources would be nice, but typically it would be one-on-one and we would learn as we go along, and I'm you're never too old to learn a new programming skill or any new skill.
Great. I just wondered if I could have a contact detail for you.
If you send Carl Stewart your details, then they can pass on my details for you. And by the way, what I've been talking to, I've produced text slides because being a sighted person, that's how I can structure my talks. And you're welcome to have a copy of the slides that I prepared. But again, talk to Stewart and then he can pass on email contact. Right.
Fitzroy, if you send an email to sales@sightandsound.co.uk and just mark it for my attention, just ask that it please be passed on to Stuart, then I will get back to you with all the info that you need.
Thank you very much.
You're more than welcome.
Thanks, Fitzroy. Right, just going to quickly, let me just get lower that one. Holly Scott Gardner.
Who was on our podcast only last week?
Oh yeah, hopefully you should be able to hear me.
Nice to be back, Holly. Yeah, good to hear you.
Hi. So I do have a fairly specific question about Braille support, and so I totally understand if this can't be answered. If I was using Braille output on one of the systems, would it be possible, is there access to the full LibLui range of tables so that you could use it with multi-language support? I don't know if that's
as far as I know. BRLTTY is, and I mean it in the nicest possible way, it's stupidly clever, and it's jam-packed with features, and it's because it's the kind of people who develop these things, so there might even be obscure dialects of obscure languages that it can handle. Mm-hmm. It is that good.
Okay, perfect. That's a great answer. Thank you.
Again, you have to do the research.
Yeah.
You know, it's that's the nature of open source. There's geniuses out there. And sometimes you get what you want, sometimes not quite.
Perfect. Thank you so much.
Brilliant. Thank you, Holly. We're just going to go to Jason Beale. Jason, if you can unmute yourself, please.
Hi there.
Hi, Jason.
How are you doing today?
Oh, we're coping here.
Good. Rightio. So I've got a VirtualBox installed. Which one of the Linuxes shall I start with? Really is my question. Shall I start with Ubuntu? I've used that one before.
It doesn't really matter. I mean, the thing I would warn you about, these are typically 3 to 4 gigabyte downloads to download the ISO.
No problem. So I just need to download the ISO.
Good, well, you're lucky. You jumped over that hurdle. In that case, it doesn't matter. Choice
doesn't matter.
It's VirtualBox is very, very good. And you can run it on a Mac. You can run it on Windows. You can also run it on Linux, of course. And then you have Linux within Linux if you want to play those games.
Right, yeah. There we go, then. That's fine. That's it. That's all I need to know.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Brilliant. Thank you. That's that for those ones. One second. Let me just get rid of that. And that. Right, this is from Callum Stoneman. Do you have any idea how well running Docker application works on Windows using JAWS? Is it similar to running a virtual machine, i.e. the screen reader can't read or interact with anything in the VM, or does it work differently as it's not a full operating system that it's running?
Right, now you have to be careful because Docker uses a whole lot of Linux operating system features. And I suspect that Docker works in Windows because it uses what Windows Linux subsystem features. So you should be able to, and again, I haven't tried this. I'm experimenting with Docker, but at a technical level, I'm trying to find out the internal details of it beyond simple cookery. And it should be possible, but till someone's done it, I can't answer your question.
Right, okay, that's that one. Oh, there you go, Andrew's answered it. I think it runs in terminal and uses the Linux subsystem as a back end, so it actually works very well. I think he might have just been actually answering a different question then. Anyway, I think we're caught up with the chat box.
Okay, brilliant. Thanks, Carl, and thanks to everybody for your questions and input. You can still get in touch if you want. Raise your hand or type a question in the chat area if you wish, if you want to ask any quick questions before we finish up. Andrew, it's really interesting. One thing that I wouldn't mind asking you as well is just around specs for machines. I was talking to Trevor Lyons this morning, who's on this call, of course, and I have an Intel Compute Stick that I bought a couple of weeks ago. And don't ask me why I bought it. It's an interesting device to just mess around with, I suppose. It's running Windows 10 and it has 4 gigabytes of RAM. It's very nice, actually. And Trevor and I were just chatting about that this morning. And what sort of specs do we need to have to run Linux pretty nicely, I suppose?
I would say 2 gigabytes minimum, but then it will crawl. 4 gigabytes better. 8 gigabytes should satisfy most applications. If you're doing hairy, scary rocket science stuff, 16 to 32 gigabytes, but that's going to cost you, and also a solid state disk drive, and that's going to cost you. So, you can get away with 2 gigabytes just. So if you've got an old PC and you want to play with Linux, just install Linux on your 2 gigabyte machine. It's a standard use of Linux distributions to give a second lease of life to older machines when Windows 10 has sort of given up on them. So 2 gigs, fine, just about. 4 gigs, okay. 8 gigs, better. And then if you're doing heroic stuff, add the resources.
Okay. So basically, if you're throwing out that old PC, maybe think of a different use for it and install Linux and try it out, see how you get on.
Yes.
Okay, brilliant. Thank you, Andrew. Any more questions, Carl?
We've just got one from Shafat. As a basic JAWS NVDA user, what key things should I aim to do with Linux?
Great question.
Right. Well, if you just want to run applications, just run applications. You don't need to do anything heroic. If you want to sort of explore the power of programming, then typically if you're new to Linux and you want to be productive, then I would recommend learning Linux command line tools and utilities so you know how to configure and set things up on your system and start up applications from the command line. And then I would go on and learn the basics of shell programming using Bash. And if you're still want to go further, then I say, well, teach yourself Python or go on a Python course. You can do things with Python. It's very powerful. And then, wherever else you wish to go. So I would say Linux command line tools and utilities, Bash, and Python would be my starting recommendations.
Okay, brilliant. Thank you very much.
I think that's pretty much. Let me just scroll back up a second. That was answered by someone else. I've got a stupid laptop, no speech, cannot work out. That was someone else about a brow display, but I think you answered that in another format, so that's fine. Is everyone answering everyone else's questions, which is very difficult when you're trying to scroll up, because you end up picking one and realizing that someone's already did it, don't it?
I think I saw a hand there from Paul O'Reilly, but Paul, I don't know if you want to ask a question or not. Paul is here in the southeast of Ireland, so I don't know, Paul, if you wanted to. I see your hand has gone back down again. So maybe it was a mistake.
Yeah, I think that's it at the minute.
Okay. Andrew, I'm gonna wrap it up because I'm very conscious of your time. Very, very grateful to you for coming along and sharing, I think, not only your knowledge, but sharing your passion. It's very obvious to me that you really love this stuff. And I think it's fantastic. We're very grateful to you for giving us the time today. And we'd love to stay in touch with you because I think this is going to be an area that people would like to really get into. So we'd love to stay in touch, but thanks so much for coming along today. And thank you very much for your time.
Well, thank you for inviting me. And request, if you want to lobby to get research funds or funds to develop training courses, I'm not very good at this. I'm not a businessman, but if you have any ideas or suggestions, you know, it needs a bit of funding to develop these materials. It takes time. And then the idea is to train people who teach blind students in schools for the blind and elsewhere, or who even, I know of people who do one-on-one help for blind people. And it doesn't need huge amounts of research funds, but it would, you know, every little bit helps. And, you know, in these COVID-19 days, if they can pay consultants £7,000 a year for messing up with Excel spreadsheets and using them when they shouldn't, then I think they could find, and that's £7,000 a day. So these people are millions a year. I don't know how. So if you have any ideas or suggestions, I would be delighted to join in and start a little research project to develop some, well, teaching programs.
Well, maybe an incentive could be that if you get to that point and you're getting £7,000 a day, you're doing pretty well, you know. Andrew, thanks. Andrew, thanks a million for chatting to us. That's all from Webinar Wednesday for this week. Thanks, as always, to Carl Brayley. We'll be back in 2 weeks' time. Until then, stay safe and stay well. And thank you again for joining us.
And thank you, Stuart. As always, the host with the most.
Good luck. Thank you.